From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, I'm Ryan Femuliner. Earlier this year, KBIA began a reporting project in the Missouri Boot Heel called Shortage in Richland. Two KBIA reporters, Bram Sable-Smith and Christopher Husted, spent almost 2 weeks in southeast Missouri to gather the stories of the challenges and conflicts there around the topics of health and agriculture. The reporting project continues as the reporters make more trips down to the Boot Heel. Last month, others from KBIA also made the trip southeast to host a public forum in Kennett, Missouri, to discuss many of the issues brought up in our reporting and to discuss possible solutions. The discussion started with a panel of experts, and the rest of the night was a conversation with those in the audience, including two state representatives, local city council members and economic development leaders, and local public health providers and officials. We recorded the conversation and bring it to you now. We began the event by showing a video introducing the region and many of the issues we discuss.
I won't say we move slower, but we take life a lot easier. The unique culture that's here, it's different.
It is unique, and it has a great deal to offer.
It's a great area with tremendous potential.
We're kind of in the middle between Memphis and St. Louis.
We're right here on the Mississippi River.
The Boot Heel is the very end of Missouri before you run into Arkansas.
And it's shaped like a boot. And that's why it's called the Boot Heel on the map of Missouri.
The Boot Heel, as defined by me, would be a small area in the southeast corner of the state of Missouri.
It consists of six counties in the lower part of the state.
I've heard the Boot Heel called many different things, from the armpit of America to the, well, I shouldn't say, but we're the forgotten part of Missouri.
The Boot Heel, I think, is the end of the world.
It's a very diverse area to live and work.
With a lot of cultures that are associated with the South, but also many cultures that are Midwestern.
The Boot Heel is a very fertile area, some outstanding farmland, very productive.
From fruit production to specialty crops, potatoes, we have sweet potatoes, sweet corn, commercial corn, soybeans, wheat.
Certainly one of the greatest agriculture regions on the face of the earth.
That is that we have big machines, we need less people. So the huge group of people that used to work on the farm, they're not needed anymore.
It's over 1,000 workers. Easy.
We have a lot of illiteracy, teen pregnancy, poverty. If you look at a sociology map, we are the red flags of the state. We have the worst.
Often people work closer together when they don't have many resources, and the Boot Heel has a lack of resources for many things. But at the same time, people are compassionate and love to work together for many of the same causes.
I like living in the Boot Heel because it's still hometown USA.
Everybody pretty much knows everybody, and I'm related to probably half the people here. So
can't walk down the street without somebody wanting to shake your hand or give you a hug or say hello.
For me, Boot Heel means smallness, means community.
It's a great community.
It's about being a part of a community.
My Boot Heel is a wonderful community that I'm proud to be from.
That's Missouri. That's the Boot Heel of Missouri.
Hello and welcome to a special KBIA community conversation we're calling Health Barriers, Symptoms of a Rural Economy. I'm Ryan Femuliner. The show is recorded in Kennett, Missouri and is produced in collaboration with KBIA's Health and Wealth Desk and Harvest Public Media. Access to health care is a growing dilemma amongst rural communities. Hospitals are closing and medical professionals are leaving, all while rural residents make up a large part of America's uninsured and impoverished population. The disparities seen in rural healthcare are symptoms of struggling rural economies across the country, and they're epitomized in the southeast part of Missouri, known as the Boot Heel. Joining me today to talk about the difficulties of healthcare access are our three panelists. Kim Hughes is the Director of Nursing at the Dunklin County Health Department. Kim, thanks for joining us. Judith Haggard is a nurse practitioner here in Kennett in the CMO Health Network. Judith, thanks for being here. And Dr. Victor Wilburn is a professor of child development at Southeast Missouri University with specialization in rural sociology. Dr. Wilburn, thanks for driving up to join us. And why don't we start with you, Dr. Wilburn. Anytime we talk about access to healthcare, you quickly have to transition to the conversation about poverty, right? And so in rural areas, what are some of the factors that contribute to poverty?
Well, you have many. One of the real challenges that we have respective to our rural communities is that we have seen this long-term and consistent erosion that has occurred within our respective to our rural communities. Jobs have left our rural communities, and as a function of that, people have left also respective to that. And so when you see this type of erosion occurring, where people are leaving because there are no jobs available in the community, then you have to ask yourself, who's leaving? Well, oftentimes that is the people who have the resources to leave. That's your young who go off and get an education and cannot come back because there's no jobs available for them to leave. And so what that does is it creates a slight imbalance respective to that community. So what's left in the community? Typically, it's your rural elderly. You have disproportionately higher amounts of rural elderly in these communities because there's too much invested to leave. Typically, that's your rural poor because in many ways they do not have the resources to leave. And when you look at that, that creates something of an economic imbalance within that community. If you have disproportionately higher amounts of your poor and your elderly in your rural communities because everyone else have pretty much left the rural community, the rural lifestyle, if you will, then you don't have enough to add to the income tax base. And so therefore you start to see, as I've stated, an erosion occurring. And so therefore that seeks expression in the form of healthcare, access to healthcare, that seeks expression in the forms of bridges, roads, that seeks expression in the form of the educational system that we have available for the next generation. And so when you see problems with education, when you see problems with healthcare, then you start to speak of the quality of life that is available and left for the people who are remaining respective to these rural communities.
Yeah. And I guess, Kim, being here in the Boot Heel in this region, given a lot of the things Victor just talked about, the economic imbalance and the populations that we are working with in these regions, what are some of the health outcomes and challenges we see on the healthcare front?
Well, teen pregnancy, infant mortality, those are the big issues right now. The health department, I mean, that may come later, but that's the big push is seeing the numbers of children that don't reach their first birthday. Why? So as far as the health department and the health thing of it, we're in prevention, and a lot of times people seek help when they're sick, we don't have a doctor or nurse practitioner there. So, we're trying to seek the wellness rate, and that's kind of hard to change the knowledge, attitude, and skills of people because a lot of times they don't think about health care insurance until they're sick. So it's just changing the whole knowledge, attitude, and skills and mindset to get them where they need to be to prevent.
And how does, again, the poverty affect all of those aspects you just talked about?
Well, you think of transportation. Do they have money? Do they have, and a lot of this clientele that we see everywhere, the responsibility that, we may have things for them, but being responsible to come get what's available. They may not have a ride or a daycare or the money. A lot of times they're like, well, we need to, I need to get an aunt and I don't have the money to get there. And, so it just kind of making their appointments, getting their visits, being there on time, being where they should be.
Mm-hmm. So. Judith, I wonder some of the things you've seen here in Kennett as well. We're talking about here with Kim, some of the challenges that we're facing here.
People don't come until they're really sick. They walk in the door and they're very, very ill. Just give you an example of one of my recent patients that came, and she barely got in the door. She was kind of leaning on her husband. She looked really ill. And when I got her back to the room, they were migrants. She had come from Guatemala to work here. And actually, they weren't even from here. They were from Jonesboro. They had driven all the way to Jonesboro because we have translators. And they wanted to be understood, which makes good sense. But she was very ill, and she didn't need to be in my clinic. She needed to be in a hospital. She needed to be in an ER. I did some really simple stuff and some real quick labs, and her hemoglobin was 5. Very, very anemic, very sick, had lost 60 pounds. She'd only been in the United States for 6 months. I told the husband, I said, you have to take her where she can get the kind of care that she needs. And I didn't know if he really got it or not, but I did follow back up to see that he did take her to St. Bernard's. And she had, I found out today, she had TB. That was the whole thing. She'd been working in a restaurant, serving people, got so sick, got so weak, started losing weight, quit. And he hadn't taken her anywhere because he didn't know where to go. He didn't know what to do. And I didn't ask how he came to us.
And as you're saying, now that becomes a public health issue.
It
not
is
just
a big,
not just an individual
it
issue
is a
anymore.
Big public health issue.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So what are some of the other reasons people wait?
Oh, well, obviously money. Being understood, no insurance. They don't know what they're going to have to pay. I am a federally qualified health center, my clinic here with CMO Health Network, so it is based on their income. They have to prove what their income is or what it isn't, maybe just food stamps, whatever, to be able to be seen. And all that's a little scary to them, really scary. Transportation, and we have many people that can't come unless a family member brings them, broken down cars. We also have people that come from Blytheville, Kentucky, all over. So they really make a statement when they do show up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then also, you've got these adults you're talking about as well, but there's the families and children that are also impacted by this. So Victor, a lot of things we're talking about, are not just boot heel issues, but what are some of the things we see issues with children in these situations as well?
Well, first of all, let me say the quality of health care is preventive, and preventive is long-term thinking. And if I am struggling, if resources are scarce, then I'm really not thinking about long-term, because much to do of my survival is predicated on whether or not I can provide a meal today or tomorrow, or maintain life tomorrow. And I think that's one of the real obstacles and challenges that we see respective to healthcare in poverty-stricken zones of America, and more specifically healthcare in rural America. And if I may just say, we see disproportionately higher amounts in the Southeast, or the fourth quadrant of boot heel rural America. And so these are some pretty significant and real issues here. Now, I personally believe that in general, families love and care about their children and will do what is necessary to meet the needs of their children. But the question is, what's necessary when I'm struggling and when resources are scarce? And how do I interpret that? Oftentimes, and the reason why we see disproportionately higher levels of children growing up with poor health care is related also to the fact that we have disproportionately higher levels of children growing up in poverty. So there's disproportionately high poverty in general in rural boot heel, in rural America, and then there's disproportionately high 1 in 4 children born into poverty, 1 in 5, children growing up into poverty. So with this, families don't really have the needs to think long-term, because they're thinking about how to make survival happen in the here and now, so to speak.
Yeah, and as you said, this quadrant of the country, the South, which we're kind of that Mississippi Delta here in the boot heel, it is, USDA calls it persistent poverty, right? It's been for 30 years now, over 20% of the population in these counties here in the boot heel, in the most southern part of the boot heel, depending on your definition of it, have been that persistent poverty state.
And another way of looking at that is when you have multiple generations where the same type of dynamic is occurring, what we're calling persistent poverty is now a culture of poverty. These are cultural issues now. They're cultural factors. And when things become culturally ingrained, they're not so easy to change, because culture means that it translates into values, norms. More than one generation is seeing the same type of hopelessness, helplessness, and or deprivation of resources. One or more generation is trying to survive without the availability of adequate resources, or a community that has the resources that are needed. And again, when we think about who stays with respective to our rural communities, we don't have a large enough amount of people with the bringing in the resources that are needed to maintain it. So therefore, our infrastructure is breaking down all around. In many ways, in the video that you showed, you could see glimpses of infrastructure breaking down, from abandoned schools to abandoned homes to all sorts of other things that speak to, if you will, quality of life across more than one generation. I think that in and of itself is a major problem.
try to transition out of the hopelessness you just mentioned there and ask, what in the face of that, and we'll talk later about what we can do, but what are we doing now? Like, what health access to health care and initiatives are there right now, Kim, in this area to try to face some of these challenges we're talking about?
There's a lot of collaboration. We've had a lot of changes in the health department in the last 6 months, and we're moving in a positive direction, and we work really close with Seminole Health Network. We are joining a chronic disease initiative this fall where we can do diabetic teaching and have courses that we've never had before. We're focusing more on community outreach, but you didn't ask me what we could do, but what we are doing. We're into the safe sleep. We have a safe sleep campaign for the babies, a prenatal case management. Family planning is a huge issue right now because we do not have family planning at the health department, and that is part of what we're gearing for. There are 6 counties in the Boot Hill that we have formed a 501(c). It's called Boot Hill Babies and Families, and Chantal knows about that. So that has enabled for us to open up and to receive better funding through Missouri Foundation of Health. We've got some community initiative grants that are starting up. We're trying more into the health fairs, the wellness, the CPR, car seats. We're the only ones that have, we have 4 technicians that are certified at the health department because unintentional injury, obesity, those are some of the health rankings that are top on the list. So. We're trying.
When you start these collaborations, what makes them possible? How do they actually happen?
I think years and years. I've been at the health department 18 years, and when I first started, they had a program called HBO, Healthy Birth Outcomes. And then I'm like, 18 years later, we've got infant mortality reduction. I'm like, this is basically the same thing, but we're gearing up. We've got more funding. But it's kind of like, okay, here we are. We're at the same problems. How can we? I see the trend coming back, but our statistics have gotten worse. Of course, the Boot Hill, Dunklin, Pemiscot usually stands out greatly on most of that. But the collaboration is what you have to do around here. You can't stand alone and do anything by yourself. But public health funding is very, very low for the state of Missouri. And I've got some statistics that are just staggering. But right now, we're ranked 50th in public health funding. And this just really kind of blew me away, but Missouri pays $5.67 per person per capita for public health. In 2010, it was $9.26. Arkansas is $47 a person. So you can see Missouri is not investing a whole lot in public health per person per capita. So when you look at $5 and Arkansas is paying $47, we don't have a whole lot to work with. So we have to collaborate. That's our only hope.
And then Judith, at your level too, what does this hunt for resources look like at the clinic level as well and everything you're working in?
Well, the biggest one, and you talked about it before, for us is to get a doctor into the clinic. And that's hard. It's hard to recruit. It's hard to get people to want to come to this area. The best that we have done is when we get people that are coming out of med school residency with the J-1 visa. And if they come into our federally qualified health center, it pays back their loans. So we're always working on that. We're trying to get that to be better for us. We also have a special pharmacy that we use, and it's called a 340B. It is just for federally qualified health centers. And what our patients can do is get really expensive medicines at a whole lot better price. And it's only our patients that can do that. We also do patient assistance, which is signing up with all the pharmaceuticals so that we can get their medicines for them. Have a lot of diabetics, tons of diabetics, and the medicines are expensive, the newer ones especially. So if the patient qualifies, if they have a Social Security, then they can sign up for that and they can get that medicine for $5 for 3 months. It's huge. So millions and millions of dollars we write to that. We are going to be collaborating with them with their dietetic educational because all of our people need that. A lot of our problems are about obesity. And in that realm, it's almost every patient, I think, needs to have some sort of dietetic counseling.
One of the local physicians was saying probably over at least 80% of his clients were diabetic. And, that and COPD. So you see the chronic health conditions, that's pretty strong percent. And that was just one local physician.
Yeah. We just need to take a minute to remind our audience, this is a special KBIA community conversation we're calling Health Barriers, Symptoms of a Rural Economy. The show is recorded in Kennett, Missouri, and is produced in collaboration with KBIA's Health and Wealth Desk and Harvest Public Media. Joining me today to talk about the difficulties of accessing health care in rural areas are Kim Hughes, the Director of Nursing in the Dunklin County Health Department, Judith Haggard, a nurse practitioner here in Kennett in the CMO Health Network, and Dr. Victor Wilburn, a professor of child development at Southeast Missouri University with specialization in rural sociology. Dr. Wilburn, I wonder, we're talking a lot about collaboration. What have you seen that works in rural communities, these kind of initiatives that can actually make some change?
Definitely. As indicated earlier, collaboration is the only thing you really have available because there are diminished resources, and so therefore the resources that are there, people have to really come together and invest in working collectively to meet the needs of children and family, because we're using the term rural communities, but we're really talking about people.
So how do we get that buy-in in our community to get everyone on board and say this is important, for especially in public health?
Probably having meetings like this. It's certainly education. The more education we can get out there about what's going on in our community, I think the more people can actually buy into that. I'll tell you another example of our caring communities here. We're looking at a brand new kitchen that they've just gotten going, and that's a place to teach. We have a community garden, which this church does, and taking that fresh food and getting the people in that know and can teach about dietetics and calories and weight loss and exercise, and using all those people together is hopefully something that we're going to do to reduce risks of heart disease and of stroke. There's actually a plan at Harvard where they're doing that, especially on women's health, and we're just going to try to duplicate that and see if we can't start small and work with all the different agencies and pull them in.
Again, talking about the roles we could have to improve things, what else is there that we can do to revive the economy as well? I mean, again, coming back to the idea of poverty a little bit, but what are the challenges we face in having job creation and things like that in these regions that really end up being part of the solution in the end, right? I mean, those things
get
are all connected.
Get the right to work.
Right.
Get the right to work.
Right to work?
Right here.
What will that do in this region?
Because we're surrounded by it. We're surrounded by Arkansas. We're surrounded by Tennessee. Everybody's nodding their head, you see.
They are in the audience. That's
and
right.
So we can't compete. That when the corporations want to come, they go to those places instead of here because we don't have it. And I know the state of Missouri is all conflicted about that, but they could at least let us have it.
We really do need jobs.
And that would help.
And back, remember, jobs left rural America. And that affected our communities. People left when jobs left, and we need to get jobs back, and people will come back as well. Jobs will stimulate the economy, and I personally believe that when you put money into the hands of families will make reasonably appropriate decisions for the outcomes of themselves, their children, and their families.
Do we have any success stories in other regions of ways they've done it? I mean, you're saying right to work, but are there other ways to bring in new jobs? Obviously, that's a pretty big answer, a big question for everybody right now. But what in other rural areas, what's been done? What are things that work in some rural areas?
Some communities create some really good incentives for companies to come. Tax breaks, free land. There's plenty of land. They'll build an industrial park and turn it over to particular companies who promise to bring jobs, into a particular area. So there are always, and this gets us into political economic types of dynamics. But there are always ways in which to bring people there. But I personally. And I can't say this specifically about rural communities, rural Missouri communities, but in general, there sometimes is a fear of change. And we have to be a little bit open to change, especially as the nation is changing all around us. And remember that if we are not changing and everyone around us is changing, then we're stagnated. And that stagnation has created a strong consequence for us today. and only we can determine what we will look like tomorrow.
And here in this region specifically, too, agriculture is huge, right? But what are the challenges there, too, that we've seen? We touched on it a little bit in the video, but...
Well, yeah. Just that how much it's changed, and it continues to change. You know, IT changes it. You get in a tractor, you're on a computer, you have a different level of worker that you need to operate that machinery. There used to be hundreds of people on the farm doing hand work, but that's just not the case anymore, and that's not going to come back. That's a changing dynamic that's changed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Family farmers have declined. We now have commercial farms. And it's very difficult for family farmers to compete with commercial farmers. And today we produce with technology 10 to 20 times more than what we produce with physical hands in the distant past. That creates an outcome. That change in and of itself must be part of what we understand to create change.
We're going to take a quick break now. This is a special KBIA community conversation we're calling Health Barriers, Symptoms of a Rural Economy. The show was recorded in Kennett, Missouri, and is produced in collaboration with KBIA's Health and Wealth Desk and Harvest Public Media. Joining me today to talk about the difficulties of accessing healthcare in rural areas are Kim Hughes, the Director of Nursing at the Dunklin County Health Department, Judith Haggard, a nurse practitioner here in Kennett in the CMO Health Network, and Dr. Vicar Wilburn, a professor of child development at Southeast Missouri University with specialization in rural sociology. I'm Ryan Femuliner. We'll be right back after a short break. We just need to take a minute to remind our audience this is a special KBIA community conversation we're calling Health Barriers, Symptoms of a Rural Economy. The show is recorded in Kennett, Missouri, and is produced in collaboration with KBIA's Health and Wealth Desk and Harvest Public Media. Joining me today to talk about the difficulties of accessing healthcare in rural areas are Kim Hughes, the Director of Nursing in the Dunklin County Health Department, Judith Haggard, a nurse practitioner here in Kennett in the CMO Health Network, and Dr. Vicar Wilburn, a professor of child development at Southeast Missouri University. And here in a moment for the rest of our conversation, we're going to start opening things up for Q&As, questions from the audience here in Kennett. If you have a question, one of our attendants here in the audience will come up and have one of the microphones here in the center of the room. So we have a question ready on, it looks like. Just please identify yourself with your name and, I guess, title or who you're with and why you're here.
I'm Tom Miller. 30 years radio experience and 10 years photography. So I'm a retired professional now, and I'm finding a lot of my friends have to leave the country, this area of the state, because there are no jobs. And I think, I may be wrong, but I think it started with NAFTA, and they're still pulling other programs out of the hat to take our jobs away from us. Am I wrong about that?
Any reactions to that here? I mean, kind of similar to what we were just talking about, Dr. Wilburn, that, you know, there's a lot of issues on all levels here to consider.
Right, definitely. You know, I started out for a reason talking about the fact that at one time we were an agricultural-based nation, and rural communities are a derivative of that. We are a reflection of that, and as a nation, we have evolved to many different other avenues by which the economy is predicated, the national economy is predicated on. So this has had an impact on our rural communities to a great degree. And that's why I say that our rural communities really just need jobs brought to the area. Now, we haven't just seen just a consistent decline to people in our rural communities. We've seen increases because in the 90s, in the early 2000s, people started moving back to the rural communities, and they started moving back to the rural communities because companies started cropping up in these particular areas. And then most recently, we've seen that although our rural communities, rural Missouri, has grown, the rate of its growth has reduced. But the other problem is on the other end, and that is the life mortality. In this portion, the fourth quadrant of the Boot Hill, is much lower as well. So again, we have all of these little infrastructure pieces that we have to fix at the same time. But if we don't get jobs here, and again, I don't care where jobs come from, but we need to have resources. People who are in 25 years, in 20s, 30s, these are the vibrant years to be productive. And if there are no resources here, then people are forced to go everywhere, and that begins to change the way of life and the quality of life in rural America. And we have the highest rate of people in their 20s and 30s that don't have high school diplomas in this portion of the rural Missouri.
Again, just looks like we have another question here in the audience.
More of a comment. I would like to echo Ms. Haggard's words on right to work. That's the number one thing. My name is Andrew McDaniel, State Representative. That's the number one thing corporations are looking for. If we don't got that, they're not coming here for jobs. I mean, even if the feds was to bring us something, I mean, I don't count on the feds, I'm sorry, for much of anything. But right to work is necessary for any economic development to help this area at all. I mean, we're competing with Arkansas. If we had right to work, we'd have the big infrastructure in Mississippi County for my area where I live in Pemiscot. So that's a big deal.
Okay. Got another one here. Another state representative, actually.
Yes, I'm Tyler Hubrick, state representative from the 151st District, which is Stoddard County, so just up the road a piece. I wanted to comment on this gentleman where he was talking about the NAFTA, feeling like jobs were going away. One thing that we did do this past session in the state legislature is we had several different pieces of legislation that we passed out to bring jobs back to Missouri, back home. There's several companies that have went overseas that are now trying to find their way back to the U.S. We are working to find ways to allow those companies to come in, to incentivize them to come to Missouri. I think that as far as jobs, it is important to do that as private society, but then also to encourage without so many regulations that are not needed. I had two bills that I had proposed this last year that would reduce some double inspections on the building of nursing homes and double inspections for just hair care in nursing homes. Things that, you know, you only need one inspection. We don't need two and three and four different government agencies to come and inspect, you know, places of business with all four different rules. We need one set of rules, one set of inspections, and let the people do their jobs and get on with it. We don't need a lot of bureaucracy, and so that is something that I think, from a legislative standpoint, is reducing the bureaucracy, reducing regulations, and allowing the private companies to do their work and to do it more efficiently will be helpful in bringing the jobs back.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. What role does entrepreneurship play? Is it possible here when you've got these challenges we're talking about? I mean, bringing in new jobs is great too, but what about growing jobs in this region?
Well, we've seen it. We've seen people come in and build businesses and therefore get more people working for them and this, that, and the other. I'd say yes, but I think it's kind of got to have an edge to get it going. You got to have some support. It's not easy.
Support from who?
Like maybe money. Maybe Maybe family. Maybe coming back home where you get that support. That's back to what you're talking about, coming back home. We have a lot of people that are professionals that have come from here that don't come back home. And we have a lot of professionals that do come back home. And they make it, don't they?
We've got another question right in the audience. Looks like that's who the question's coming from.
Yeah.
I'm Jim Grieving. I'm Director of Economic Development for the City of Kennard. I've been here about 7 months. And I can tell you that just as you say, in healthcare, collaboration is important. That's absolutely critical in economic development and creating jobs, particularly in rural areas. And the loss of jobs in rural areas is not unique to Southeast Missouri or the Boot Hill. It's a nationwide trend. It's been there for a long, long time. And I think the, there are a lot of, when I go out and talk with companies about expanding and focusing on what we're going to do in the future here and working with the partners and people I work with in this area and throughout the state, you know, the number one issue that comes up when it comes to bringing jobs to an area is always going to be workforce, first and foremost. Other issues have been talked about. I can't control those issues. Mm-hmm. What I can get involved with through my partnerships and collaborations is we can together work on developing a good quality workforce. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate in this area that we have good school systems throughout Dunklin County, throughout the Boot Hill. We also have the ability for workforce. Higher education is a key factor. One of the challenges we face in the Boot Hill are that the number of percentage of higher education 4-year degree graduates in this area are lesser than other parts of the state. That's a challenge that we face. We're very fortunate here, though. While higher education can often be a ticket to get the heck out of the area and go somewhere big, and you can't fault people for doing that. One of the things that surprised me when I got to Kennett is that in Kennett, in this region of the state, the higher education facilities we have here are actually an opportunity for people to stay in the community, stay in the area, and take jobs that are here. Southeast Missouri State University in Cape Girardeau has a campus here in Kennett. They have one in Malden and Sykeston, Boot Hill. They graduate 60 students a year approximately from the campus here in Kennett who never go to Cape Girardeau. They graduate as a result of all the classes being taken here. Those classes focus on education, agribusiness, things that are specific to this region, the kinds of jobs that we have. Three Rivers College, based out of Poplar Bluff, has campuses around the area. They also help prepare young people, get students into the course of higher education. At the same time, they also provide customized job training assistance through the Missouri Division of Workforce Development. And they, again, have programs that are specific to the needs of this area, whether it's healthcare or whatever that might be. So the opportunity that we have, we're focused on in Kennett and Boot Hill and everyone, is to leverage those partnerships, recognize the value of our education. That's something we can control by working, everybody working together and focusing. If a business wants to expand or come into this area, we've had discussions and we've talked with Southeast Missouri State, the Vocational School, Three Rivers College. If somebody has a specific need that for workers in this area in terms of training and so forth, those institutions are prepared to assist immediately with that training and to get us on track to provide that level of the skills that those employers need. So one quick thing on entrepreneurship, one of the other things we're working with now is through Southeast Missouri State Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, Operation Jumpstart Fast Track, which was done by the Kauffman Foundation in Kansas City. We're in the process of bringing that into the Kennard area and throughout the Boot Hill. And that's a way to help people develop business plans and people have money to invest to come up with a plan that can be effective and be a successful business. And we know that the future, you know, the big companies aren't locating in rural areas anymore. It's expanding of existing companies and the ability for entrepreneurs to go out and start a business and start hiring 2, 3, 4, 10 employees over a period of time. And that's really where our future of growth is going to be in this part of the country, and that's obviously what we're focusing on. So.
Yeah, yeah, and it sounds like you have a tough job based on a lot of things we're talking about. I wonder, too, we talked about it a little bit earlier, too, but agriculture, where does that play the role? I didn't hear you talk a whole lot about it. Obviously, it's an industry around here, a big deal over in this region. But where do you see the future for that, and what's the opportunity, or is there much opportunity for development and expansion?
There is. I think one of the things, say we've got some of the richest farmland on the face of the earth. It's a big industry here. But as everybody's mentioned, it's going to larger farms, and it won't be long before the farm equipment will be self-driven, and so forth. yes, absolutely. But what's happening, though, is you see that Three Rivers College in Southeast are doing teaching high-tech agriculture type of programs, and classes are specific to that. You have to think of agriculture not just in terms of farms, but in working at gins, manufacturers of seeds, and research. All those kinds of things are going on. I think the level of agriculture innovation that's going on in the six Boot Hill counties is incredible. If what's going on in terms of making the farmers more productive, and the level of crops and production that we're bringing out here in terms of feeding, doing our part to feed the world.
We just need to take a minute to remind our audience this is a special KBIA community conversation we're calling Health Barriers, Symptoms of a Rural Economy. The show is recorded in Kennett, Missouri, and is produced in collaboration with KBIA's Health and Wealth Desk and Harvest Public Media. Joining me today to talk about the difficulties of accessing health care in rural areas are Kim Hughes, the Director of Nursing in the Dunklin County Health Department, Judith Haggard, a nurse practitioner here in Kennett in the CMO Health Network, and Dr. Victor Wilburn, a professor of child development at Southeast Missouri University with specialization in rural sociology. I wonder, for people here on the panel, as we see who else has a question, talked about building a healthy workforce, right? But that word healthy has a couple meanings, right? Like, you mentioned it earlier, Kim. How do you attract new jobs when you look at those health indicators and you know that the workforce might be sick or not have the health care they need? Like, how do you address those issues?
Well, there's been a bigger trend with a lot of the places in town, the businesses, about wellness. They're pushing for wellness. Let me pay for you to have a membership at the fitness center. And, we're doing some things like breast cancer awareness and Heart Health Month. And I think partnering with the schools and the businesses about what we can offer. We do monthly cholesterol drives and stuff like that. And I think if we can catch, and this is a good example, there was the hospital partnered with Sea Light Gas and Water, and they were doing an eye vision test, and it truly saved this guy's sight because he was doing the eye test, and the hospital was like, hey, anyway, he wound up having a tumor in behind his eye, and just a simple wellness check at a business with the hospital truly saved him. They said that if he'd have been much longer, he would have lost his sight. So those are just the small things that you don't think about. You think of wellness fairs and, oh yeah, humdrum, let's hand something out. But those little simple eye tests and those simple A1Cs, and they can trigger things that could be bigger problems, and we've seen it happen.
And so for that wellness program to exist in the first place, that takes buy-in either from an hospital pushing it or insurance company or a business, right?
Yeah, the hospital, we have joined with the hospital on some events, and that was one of them. And Sea Light Gas and Water is probably one of our larger businesses in town, and that was a good venture. We offered some things in the hospital, we joined together. So that was a first, and that was a big effort, and we saw some good things come out of that.
Right. We've got a question from the audience, a former Intersection guest, actually, from KBIA.
You betcha. Dr. Steve Pooh, local physician. I just want to ask a question and get more back to healthcare. I mean, I've talked about with several of you before about there's a study that comes out every year through the University of Wisconsin, funded by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, on county health rankings. And certainly the Boot Hill is constantly, we're actually the lowest, usually the last counties, consistently year after year after year. But you look at the data and you look at what other factors that determine our poor health outcomes. And it basically comes to two things. It's behaviors, a lot of smoking, obesity, chronic diseases or whatever. And the others are the things that Dr. Wilburn talked, the social determinants, poverty, unemployment, and whatever. And those are your main factors that are determining bad health outcomes in our particular area. Those are things that are going to take generations to change. But we have to start. But you look at the United States in general, we spend by far more money than any developed country in the world on health care. But yet we have some of the poorest outcomes of developed nations. Costa Rica is better than us. So my question is from your perspective, and I think, Kim, you're starting to allude to that, is it our healthcare system in general broken? And if it is, how in your opinion do we fix it? What do we have to do to get better outcomes, not only in the Boot Hill, but in this country, when we have all these resources, we have all this money to deliver the latest in technology, yet we have the poorest outcomes? Why do you think that's occurring, and what can we do to change it?
That's not a small task.
Yeah. Right? I was going to say, if I could answer that, we'd be doing good.
Oh, no, what are some of the things we can do? What are we trying to do right now?
Well, you know, the age-old thing, like you said, knowledge, attitude, and skills. And I think the frustrating thing is I see every day, just like with our WIC program, you know, we're giving out free vouchers for good, healthy food. Well, we see this young generation, it's a fast food world. If they have to sit out and wait 30 minutes to get a free voucher, they're not going to do it. I don't know how you change that. You know, when we have, you know, TB medication, somebody on contact medication, we'll do incentives. We'll give them a voucher. We'll do, you know, anything just to free medicine. And it's really tough, even when you have free handouts. People don't like to wait. They don't want to, you know, if they have to wait more than 30, 40 minutes. You know, it's all goes back to knowledge, attitude, and skills. And that's an age-old issue that I wish I had the answer. But it's just that it's a generation of, you know, I want it now, I want it quick, and I want it fixed, and I don't want to wait. And I don't know, Judy.
I do think the physical fitness thing that has really been a goal, especially of the First Lady in the school system, it has made some difference. You've got the NFL doing it now. You got all these people saying, a kid can't sit for hours and watch TV. Those are the people you're going to change if they ever buy into it. You know, always on the phone, always playing videos, not going to bed. The parents are asleep. The kids are awake. Then they get to school. They don't perform well. It's parenting. Definitely parenting.
Well, and we see parents aren't coming in with their kids. You know, we're with women and children mainly. We're in the grandparent generation. They're trying to raise these kids now, and that's universal. But, you know, we've had to change and revamp, you know, because before, if you don't have a parent with you, you can't get a shot. Well, then no one would probably get a shot, you know. We're just, you know, we've got the different sets of caregivers. It's a different generation, grandparents raising their children. So that's our biggest clientele.
What of Dr. Poo's question about the healthcare system in general, too, and the challenges, not just here in the Boot Hill, but?
I think a lot of that's about accountability on the patient ends, too.
Yeah, there's not a correct answer. It's just I just wanted your thing. But it's just like what you're talking about, you know, healthy foods and not fast food and whatever. But do you know that eating healthy is so much more expensive than eating fast food? And how do you correct that? But what I was getting at is I wanted you to talk more about how the focus of healthcare has to be about health and about being healthy and more about prevention. And the way our healthcare system works today is basically it feeds on sickness and unhealthinesses. And basically we as professionals are paid fee for service, and we're paid when people are sick. Now, a lot of thought is going around now through accountable care organizations, et cetera, where we sort of reverse that a little bit, and basically you incentivize people to keep people healthy. And maybe you could comment on that and how that works into the whole scheme of things.
Well, we both do things about that. We have wellness things within our clinics, too, where communities ask and schools ask, and you do these things. And you try to give people more awareness. You try to catch those people who have a problem and don't know they have a problem, and that always occurs. You find a new diabetic. You find somebody with terrible cholesterol. You tell them what their BMI is. And they have to accept that. You know, they might find that out, but they may never come in for care because they don't have the means to come for care, they think. So it is really, really difficult. And I still say it goes back to good parenting, teaching the parents the prevention part, and hoping the parents will teach it to their kids. Parents are the example. The parents are the ones the kids follow. What are we talking about? We're talking huge issues. How do you change that? One thing we saw in our community, and some of you will remember Sister Mary Frances, and she did a very big grant study with a Kellogg grant, and she was very successful. But she was very successful because it was almost one-on-one. She took single mothers who had no jobs, who had no education, who had no skill. She made sure they got that. In the time that they were with them, they earned their GED, or they became an LPN, or you know, all these different things. You could just see those people grow. It was amazing at their little graduation what had happened in their lives because of that very personal attention that they got and the money and the resources to be able to do it.
That takes so many resources for that kind of investment in
Absolutely.
One person, right?
Absolutely. It does.
Dr. Pooh, I think you're so right. And I think, you know, when I first started the health department, we were doing well child clinics, pap smears. And then the thing, you know, we've come full circle. We need a health educator at the health department, and we're looking towards that. We're looking for family planning. And I think things are on the – we have a new administrator, and Lisa's done – leaps and bounds in 5 months. So we're heading there. We're not there yet. It's going to take time. It didn't happen overnight. But, you know, people come to us when they know they don't have any place else to go. They'll come in with a 200 over 110, you know, and they're like, I can't afford to go somewhere else. And so the education is there, but you're right, the prevention. We see a lot of good things from our collaboration referrals. Doctors will change medications, send people to the health department, get daily blood pressures, get their cholesterol checked, A1C. So that's our point of education, but you're right, catching it on the front end. And hopefully some of these chronic disease classes, even though we're catching people with a chronic disease, maybe help them to increase and better their lifestyle. But we're not seeing sick people. We're supposed to see, you know, be on the wellness end, but we tend to see people coming in broken. That's where they head because they don't know where else to go.
Another question in the audience. We'll go ahead and take that real quick.
One thing that I think is unique about Southeast Missouri, you know, we are here in with the Mississippi nearby. We have the opening of the Panama Canal that's going to offer us increased opportunities for exports, which the Delta Center does wonderful research, which helps our agriculture. But we, you know, in our areas, we are challenged because we do have this entitlement mentality that has been generations of developing and growing. My husband and I, he's a youth pastor at our church, and we're in the lower socioeconomic area of the town that we live in. And when you talk with our kids at church, what are you going to do when you grow up? They don't have that vision. Well, we're just going to go to the mailbox and get the check like mom and dad do. And I think a lot of it is the education where we're teaching those kids, no, we're not going to do that. But then our other obstacle with healthcare, you know, as well, you know, finding the workforce that we have, because many, you know, because of this entitlement mentality, they've turned to drugs and different things. So we have difficulty getting the workforce to pass the drug screens to where we can have that workforce availability. It's a vicious cycle, but I do think together we can break it. Anyway, that's just a comment if you all would.
Oh, I agree. I used to work in mental health before I did this, and you talk about a serious problem when the kids say, I've got to go get a crazy check. My mom says I got to go and get a crazy check so that we'll keep getting our checks. This is ongoing. In Arkansas, it's different. Arkansas does different with their Medicaid and their entitlement programs. They do not give them generationally. They don't just keep giving them and giving them. People get off of it. It is designed to be short-term, get people on their feet, give them the education they need so they can get a job. And somehow down here, we hadn't done that. And our kids know it. Our kids definitely know it. And they think they don't have to work at school. They don't have to do anything because they're going to be taken care of. How do you change that?
And again, as I was saying earlier, when more than one generation sees the same dynamic, yes, it becomes a cultural trait. And cultural traits change the culture. And these things then become harder. They become reinforced into the fabric of a particular area. They become much, much more difficult to resolve.
I just have something really quick. My passion is prenatal. I did OB before I ever started the health department. But, you know, where this all starts is the health of our child when we're prenatally and what we're raising kids to be. And we do the temporary Medicaid cards at the health department. And something that's changed in this last year that's been major is with the backlog with the Medicaid, and you've seen that. Before, if the girls, 30 to 60 days, if they didn't get their card, they could come back to the health department. What we're seeing now is one per pregnancy is what the government has told us we could do. They get it. They get it 30 days. The system is backlogged. They don't get their Medicaid. So I've talked to a local physician, and it's a huge problem. They'll go second trimester and never see a doctor. So we've gone from we really want those people in for care that we've created this barrier where they won't have their card and they won't go pay. So he's not seeing them till the end of the trimester when they're ready to deliver and they've not had prenatal care. So we've got huge, you know, issues, but we really try to work on the prenatal side, and I think there needs to be more prenatal education. There's really not a whole lot around here, but that starts with the thrive of our babies and our mamas and the smoking and pregnancy. But the temporary Medicaid and the Medicaid is a huge issue at the health department, what we see. And it flows over to the hospital. They go there. They don't have their Medicaid resources, and it just affects us all.
I did have one follow-up on your idea about the generational change, and we've heard that from many people today, too. So who's the target, then? Like you mentioned the youth as well, and that's come up constantly. Like, if we're going to try to make cultural changes or changes in youth, is that where the target should be or one of the targets should be? And if so, how do you do that?
You got to hit all places. You change the child, but don't change the environment that he or she is a product of, then the environment will undo everything that you've done. Families are just as much a part of the area. Adult family members are just as much a part of the area that need to be changed as the children. And now the children will be a function of the next generation, but the adult families today are part of the here and now. And if you work and make an effort toward changing and giving them the resources they need and creating that change, and education is part of how you give them the information and resources that they need, then they can start to prepare a changes and offset some of the cultural directions that we're going in that are not boding well for rural America.
All right. Well, we probably better end it there. That's all the time that we have for this special KBIA community conversation. We called Health Barriers, Symptoms of a Rural Economy. The show was recorded in Kennett, Missouri. Thanks again to all of our guests, Kim Hughes, the Director of Nursing at the Dunklin County Health Department, Judith Haggard, a nurse practitioner here in Kennett in the SEMO Health Network, and Dr. Victor Wilburn, Professor of Child Development at Southeast Missouri University. And thanks so much to all of our guests here in the audience who contributed great to the conversation. We really appreciate it tonight. Conversation tonight was produced by the KBIA Health and Wealth Desk, Brand Sable-Smith, and Harvest Public Media's Christopher Husted. Travis McMillan is our technical director, and Austin Federa is our audio engineer. Special thanks to Lowell Thomas and Patrick Nealon. And I'm Ryan Femioner. Thanks for joining us, and have a great day.